Welcome to the Minor League Radio Podcast, your source for what to think. From politics to pro wrestling, pop culture to progressive metal, confusing rhetoric, chronic masturbation, religion, rashes in inconvenient places, and of course the gold standard in pornography criticism. Gather around now your digital player of choice and enjoy the musings of your perpetually confused host. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Gardner.
I bid you greetings, noble citizens. It is I, Jim Gardner, at the helm of the Minor League Radio Juggernaut once again for another half hour of hoots and hijinks. First of all, I need to address the fact that there hasn't been a podcast for over 2 months. It sucks. There are several reasons for this, some good, some not so good, but I will share most of them with you. First of all, I got sick with the flu for about 3 weeks. This is something I do in my spare time, obviously. And when you're sick, you have to make a decision about how you spend the time that you have. I need to work, because if I don't, the bills don't get paid. When the bills don't get paid, the lights get turned off. When the lights get turned off, Mom has to work the corner for money to get the lights back on. When Mom has to work the corner to get the lights turned back on, a drunken John comes home. When a drunken John comes home, he staggers into the wrong bedroom. When he staggers into the wrong bedroom, I wake up with a strange man in my bed. I didn't want to wake up with a strange man in my bed, so I worked, even though I was sick, and all my downtime was more or less spent in bed trying to get better, which meant no time for the podcast, unfortunately.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Okay, so wine mode, now off. The other reason there hasn't been a podcast in so long is that I have wanted for years to try my hand at stand-up comedy. Now, my podcast originates from a rural area in Minnesota, so my plan was to start driving to the Twin Cities in the fall and hit open mics and work on my act and see what happens. So I was surfing the web, learning about comedy clubs in the Twin Cities and where the open mics are and whatnot, and I saw that the Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis was putting on a contest called The Funniest Man in the Twin Cities. And I thought to myself that this might be just the kind of thing to put some pressure on myself to actually do something rather than just thinking about doing something. So I filled out their online application and entered the contest. A few days later, I got an email back saying, "Get ready, you're going on the 29th of June." That was about 5 weeks ago, now six. So I've been spending my spare time trying to write some jokes and funny stories, memorize them, and getting about 3 minutes of original stand-up comedy together for the contest. None of these things is the podcast, which got put on the back burner. So the 29th was this past Friday, or a week ago this past Friday, excuse me. So I drove 2.5 hours to Minneapolis for my shot at Comedy Glory. So I had a bunch of buddies show up, and we sat around and drank a few beers. Now, I had been rehearsing my 3 minutes for several weeks, so I had my act memorized and all that. And, you know, I've been public speaking. I've done some theater and competitive speaking. So the idea of getting on stage doesn't frighten me very much. You know, I get nerves, but not debilitating. You know, that was actually part of my routine, was the fact that on the top of a lot of lists of people's biggest fears, near or at the top of most of those lists is the fear of speaking in front of people. That really doesn't scare me. In fact, I embrace opportunities like that. It's kind of my bliss, if you will. And, you know, I've been on radio and I've played in bands, so I've gathered a lot of hours performing in various ways in front of people. And to me, it's all the same muscle. So the idea of doing stand-up comedy really appealed to me because it's you don't have to rely on other people. It's all you. You just go out there and you try to make people laugh. And that's what I wanted to do. So I get there and I meet my friends, and my sister showed up as well. And we had a few beers and I got to meet the other guys I'd be competing with. They were all very nice. And it turns out there was only three other people. There were five scheduled for the evening, and one of them didn't show. So there were a total of four. And we all went on stage and did our one shot at glory, our 3 minutes. And as it turns out, I won the evening. I had the best 3 minutes of them all. It felt pretty good. Although the thing about the contest is that they're very, very strict about timing. They give you 3 minutes, and if you go over those 3 minutes, you are docked half your points. So little to no chance of winning if you go over time. So that was the biggest pressure, is like, can I get everything that I want to say in? and still sound conversational and do a good presentation and all that. So I get up on stage and I tell you, I barely remember it. I never thought I'd be that nervous, but I really was. I mean, this is, it's a new thing. You know, when you're like competitive speaking or all the speaking that I have done and all the performances and whatnot that I have done have been to a captive audience. You know, they're there for a reason that didn't have a lot to do with me. And playing in a band, you get to hide behind the guitar, which is, that's what I do. I play guitar when I was in bands. So, you know, you're hiding behind an instrument. So it's all a little different. When you're on stage to do stand-up comedy, those people are there to see you and to be entertained by you. And there's nothing to hide behind except a microphone. And that's not much. So it turns out when I hit the stage, I was very, very nervous. And, I felt my voice quavering, and not only was my voice quavering, but I remember looking at my arm and my hand and noticing that I had the shakes, which is a little surprising. I just didn't think I would be that nervous on stage because I was ready to attack. I was ready to carpe diem or carpe noctem, seize the night, huh? So, bottom line is that I barely remember doing my set. It just felt like I went up on stage, screamed, wet myself, and then left the stage. But I was told that I did quite well. In fact, the headliner of the night, a guy by the name of Joe Larson, very, very, very funny, said he was impressed with my performance. So that was almost as cool as winning the contest, or that night, that round of the contest in and of itself. So lots of fun. Hopefully I make it to the next round, the semifinals. See, the thing about their scoring is that it is an overall score, so you can win the evening and still not be part of the final cut, but you can also not win the evening and be part of the final cut because they take the scores of each Friday night's contest. I guess they're doing five amateur comedians every Friday night over the course of the summer, and at the end of August, they're going to do the semifinals. So hopefully I'll get invited back, and even if I don't get invited back, I'm certainly going to continue to hit open mics because it was pretty damn fun. I like making people laugh. So if you're in the Twin Cities area, look for my name at the open mics, and who knows, maybe I'll be a famous comedian someday. Until then, there is always the podcast, which I have been neglecting, but no longer.
Hell, I like you. You can come over to my house and fuck my sister.
Wear Protection, the Minor League Radio Podcast, is a known carrier of herpes.
Yeah! All right, let's get back in the saddle and dust off the old Minor League Radio juggernaut. I mean, holy shit, there's a lot going on. Obamacare gets upheld by the Supreme Court. The Attorney General gets held in contempt. My cock and balls get held, oh so lovingly, by my own hand. Tomcat splits. These are momentous times, and I know you have been flailing in the dark just waiting for someone to light a candle in the darkness and provide some perspective. So here I am, back and ready to administer the colonoscopy this country so desperately needs. Let's start with Obamacare, shall we? This from the Daily Beast. A sharply divided Supreme Court upheld the individual insurance mandate in President Obama's health care law, handing the White House a major victory on its major domestic achievement 4 months before the election. With protesters gathered outside the court's marble halls, Chief Justice John Roberts revealed that he had joined the liberal wing in a 5-4 ruling that the federal government indeed has the power to impose a penalty on those who fail to buy insurance through its taxing authority, not under the Interstate Commerce Clause, as the administration had argued. It was a stunning moment because the media and political establishment had essentially concluded after oral arguments that the mandate was toast. All right, here's President Obama's statement.
Earlier today, the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, the name of the health care reform we passed 2 years ago. In doing so, they've reaffirmed a fundamental principle that here in America, in the wealthiest nation on earth, no illness or accident should lead to any family's financial ruin. I know there will be a lot of discussion today about the politics of all this, about who won and who lost. That's how these things tend to be viewed here in Washington. But that discussion completely misses the point. Whatever the politics, Today's decision was a victory for people all over this country whose lives will be more secure because of this law and the Supreme Court's decision to uphold it.
All right, so obviously there's a shit ton to say about Obamacare. We've got 3-4 cable news networks plus the regular networks all filling up hours and hours of programming analyzing this thing. And why? Well, because we don't know what the fuck's in it. I mean, when Nancy Pelosi herself goes, you have to pass the bill to find out what's in the bill, we know we're talking about some complicated shit. And frankly, that scares the piss out of me. But let me start by saying that I understand the moral argument for having health care for everybody. There's a debate as to whether health care is a right or is it a commodity. I tend to lean toward it being a right, although I certainly understand the argument of it being a commodity. That being said, this is the richest country on earth, and we should be able to take care of our poor, of which I count myself as one. I'm broke as fuck. I can't afford health care for myself. I can't afford health insurance because my employer provides health insurance, but it costs me $150 a month for me, an unmarried individual. So $150 out of my paycheck breaks the bank. Then I'm starting to make choices about whether to keep the lights on or eat cat food, shit like that. So I get it. I'd love to be able to have health insurance and go to the doctor, but I can't right now. It's just that's the way life is. So I definitely identify with wanting to provide health care for everybody. I think it is a good thing. Having said that, there are a lot of things about this law that really piss me off. First of all, you got to talk about just real basic economics, and I think I've addressed this before. When you have a very little of something, let's say, for example, that I have in my hand a vibrating butt plug, and it is the only vibrating butt plug in the world. People are going to be clamoring for my vibrating butt plug because it is the only one in the world and therefore has a lot of value ascribed to it. On the other hand, let's say that I have a vibrating butt plug, you have a vibrating butt plug, your grandmother has a sack full of vibrating butt plugs dating back to 1901, and vibrating butt plugs are readily available at any convenience store, just off the shelf. Well, suddenly vibrating butt plugs aren't going to be worth shit, because it's going to be very, very easy to get one, and therefore will have very little value. It's the same principle with money, and healthcare puts this principle, it turns it on its ear, because with healthcare, because it is out of the hands of the consumer, you see, healthcare provided by employers, or health insurance, I should say, started when employers didn't want to compensate workers monetarily for whatever reason. I forget what the reason was, but it's not the point. The point is that they had to or didn't want to compensate with more money. So what they did was they started to provide healthcare benefits for their workers. And what that did was it took the consumer out of the equation in a free market society. In a free market system, that is not a good thing. When you don't have the incentive to look out for the best value for your buck, then things start to get devalued. You have inflation. So now we're not looking at our healthcare in terms of how much it's going to cost. We just lay a card on the table and our insurance company takes care of it. The insurance company is the perceived endless pool of money. Now insurance companies obviously are not a endless pool of money. So then you have the insurance companies fighting with hospitals and healthcare providers, and it turns into a mess. It just turns into a mess. Now, when you start getting the government involved in the vibrating butt plug, healthcare business, the government is the ultimate in the endless pool of money. Healthcare providers, HMOs, whoever's involved in charging people for their healthcare, they're suddenly going to start charging $25 for aspirin, $25,000 a night for dialysis, or $1,500 a night for a hospital room. Whatever it is, they will charge too much because there's no incentive, there's no pressure from the consumer to keep prices down. And this, I believe, is just the major problem, especially with healthcare, but just government in general getting involved in the private sector. It devalues the money. It takes the consumer out of the equation, and there's no pressure to keep prices down, except the government imposing price controls, and that fucks with the economy even more. This is just the government fucking with a free market system. Now, you can argue whether healthcare should be a right or a commodity. I'm not going to make that argument right now because I haven't decided yet. But for right now, it is treated as a commodity. Because the free market treats it as a commodity, I think so must we. Another problem I have with this healthcare law, but it's something that college students are throwing up their hands and saying hallelujah, is the fact that you can stay on your parents' healthcare plan until you are 26 years old. Now, you do the math on this, and what it sounds like, what they figured, was that a student can stay on his parents' healthcare plan for 8 years, which is the time it generally takes to get a doctorate in something. I think it takes 8 years of college to get a doctorate in a given field. Let's see. So 18 plus 8, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. Yes, I have to count on my fingers. So yeah, 26 years old. Fine. Maybe we can tweak that and say that if you're in college, you can stay on your parents' healthcare plan. Otherwise, I just think this keeps kids from growing up and becoming men and women, becoming adults. I mean, this is part of the reason we have 40-year-olds like myself at home living with their parents playing PlayStation. Although, let me state for the record that my parents live with me because they're in ill health. I'm the one working and supporting everybody, okay? But yeah, there we have a generation of people roughly my age and within 10 years, and it's getting worse, where they never grow up. They never move out and establish their own means of support and their own home, their own household, and do the work of doing life as an adult in America. They just want to go home and work a part-time job and play video games and drink on the weekends. And it's not a good thing. And obviously, I can't lay that problem on Obamacare, but it doesn't help. It's not helping to solve that problem. It is contributing. It is enabling that problem. So I have a problem with Obamacare also for that reason. And just in general, my conservative leanings make me mistrustful of the government running anything. I do not think that the government's track record of running anything is very good. There are obviously exceptions, but overall, the government sucks at doing almost everything. If you want, you can't micromanage 300 million people without becoming more and more totalitarian. If you want society to run well with this many people and keep them free, you have to keep them free and allow them to work out their own problems. Some of these problems will be very painful to work out and will take time because, you know, we are in the position that we're in due to a series of little steps. And it's going to take a series of little steps to get us back to normal or back to a manageable, whether it's healthcare, whether it's just a well-functioning society. And the government putting its greasy palms on it just doesn't help, and I don't trust it. Another thing that pisses me off is I think the Democrats were crooked as fuck getting this passed. I distinctly remember President Obama saying that there were going to be open meetings about healthcare. C-SPAN was going to televise them. I know C-SPAN begged Obama, where are the open meetings? Can we televise them? And I was politically aware at this point. I was looking for the open meetings when Obamacare was coming down the pipe. And I don't remember seeing them. Now, I'll admit, that's not to say that they didn't happen. Maybe they did. Maybe you can let me know. Email me, jim@minorleagueradio.com, and tell me when they were and if they were televised. But I don't remember, and I was looking. Not to say I could have missed it. I could have. But I don't think so. I think they were crooked as fuck. Another way these rat bastards were crooked as fuck is they spent time and money, and all of these guys were in front of us, the American people, when they were trying to get Obamacare passed, saying to us that the penalty for not buying insurance wasn't a tax. It's not a tax. It's just a penalty. If you choose not to buy insurance, we're going to impose a penalty on you. But then they go in front of the Supreme Court and say, well, it really is a tax, you know. It's, you know. So what is it? I mean, I know it amounts to the same thing, but what are you going to call it? Is it a tax? Is it a penalty? It's crooked. And it gave John Roberts the out that he needed to vote to pass this thing. And that's another thing. Why, you know, you'll never see the liberal wing of the Supreme Court break rank and vote for a conservative issue or have a conservative thought on a given issue. That only happens on the conservative side of things. I don't know what our problem is with selecting our people, but they seem to want to be mavericks, even on something as vital as Obamacare. John Roberts, the guy that was the Democrats said was stealthily installed as Chief Justice by George Bush. They were apoplectic when John Roberts was installed as Chief Justice. And now they're all like, oh, what a masterfully written opinion. We love John Roberts. He's a brilliant jurist. Oh, I want to throttle him. I just want to throttle them. I don't really, but oh my God, they piss me off. All right, that's enough on Obamacare for now.
The Minor League Radio Podcast. Currently trending on Twitter.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
Hashtag awful.
All right, the other big political story of the past few weeks is Eric Holder being held in contempt of Congress. From ABC News, after a bitter partisan debate, the House of Representatives voted to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt of Congress for withholding certain documents related to the Fast and Furious gunwalking operation. Led by Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi, 108 Democrats skipped the vote, storming out of the chamber in protest. I'm going to get to that shit. Anyway, the measure passed 255-67 with one member voting present. I don't even know what that means. How do you vote present? Well, I'm here. What do I think? I don't know. I'm here. Idiots. God. 17 of the Democrats who didn't walk out voted with the Republican majority to hold Holder in contempt of Congress. Two Republicans, Representatives Stephen LaTourette of Ohio and Scott Rigel of Virginia, opposed the resolution. The vote marks the first time in the history of Congress that it has found a sitting U.S. Attorney General in contempt of Congress. All right. First thing I have to say about this is I am so fucking pissed off at the Democrats for walking out on this vote. What is your fucking job? To get your asses in that chamber and vote on things. But no, if something you don't like comes down the pipe, we're just going to walk away. Wah, we're little fucking babies that need our diapers changed. We're just going to walk out because we don't like what's happening. It's the same fucking thing they did with Scott Walker during that whole union, government union vote. I don't remember the details of that, but a bunch of Democrats skipped town, left to a different state, rather than vote on something that they don't like. Republicans have never done this, to my knowledge. And if you know of a situation where they did, email me because I want to know about it, because that would piss me off just as much. You have a fucking job to do when you are elected to Congress, whether it's at the state level or the national level. Get your pretty little asses in that chamber and do your job. It just fries my ass that they did that. The ABC story continues. What happens to Holder next? If Congress wants to impeach him, ABC's Matt Negrin reported that he will have to go through the Justice Department, which Holder leads. And the Justice Department isn't compelled to prosecute the Attorney General, and I believe that since this story has been written, they did, in fact, decide not to do anything. The House voted on a second civil contempt resolution as well, which authorized the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform to initiate or intervene in judicial proceedings to enforce its subpoena. Congressional GOP sources say the Oversight and Government Reform Committees will now work with the House General Counsel to pursue the case in federal court and ultimately compel Holder to hand over the documents. Here's a quote, "We are still fighting for the truth and accountability for the family of murdered Border Patrol agent Brian Terry, for whistleblowers who have faced retaliation, and for countless victims of Operation Fast and Furious in Mexico." That, according to Representative Daryl Issa, the chairman of the committee, he said in a statement after the vote. Unless President Obama relents to this bipartisan call for transparency and an end to the cover-up, our fight will move to the courts where we will prevail in getting the documents that the Justice Department and President Obama's flawed assertion of executive privilege have denied the American people. All right, this pisses me off more than Obamacare, and here's why. President Obama promised to have the most transparent administration in history. He said it over and over again on the campaign trail. I talked before about the lack of open meetings for the Affordable Care Act. All Congress wants is to find out what the fuck happened to the guns in Fast and Furious. A man is dead. This isn't some hotel room break-in. A guy died. Killed by guns that this country's government let get away from them. And Holder and the Obama administration are running around doing everything they can to not comply with Congress. Why? The Fast and Furious program was apparently started under the evil one, George W.'s administration. Why not have full disclosure? What are you trying to hide? You claim executive privilege? Fine. I agree that any sitting president has a right to it. So redact what you need and release everything else. The idiot Dems claim that this is nothing more than a racist political witch hunt. Really? Really? Because I remember the evil one, George W., appointing the first Hispanic Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez. I also remember the Democrats drumming him out on some bullshit hiring and firing policy. Oh, but that's not racist. It's never racist when the Dems pull this shit. Meanwhile, a Border Patrol agent is dead, and Congress wants to find out why, and because it's led by Republicans, it's a racist witch hunt. Fuck my puckered asshole, this shit gets me heated. Please remember this, because I know I sound as partisan as I ever have. But any time the liberals, lefties, Democrats accuse the conservatives of being something bad because that's what they think I'm a conservative, therefore I'm bad. I think lefties are wrong, lefties think I'm bad. But any time they accuse the conservatives of being something, it is because that is what they themselves are. The left accuses conservatives of being racist, it is because they themselves are racist. Check the liberal blogs and tweets and be horrified at the number of times Justice Clarence Thomas is called a nigger. It is unconscionable. The left projects what they themselves are onto the right.
MinorLeagueRadio.com.
Break yourself, fool!
MinorLeagueRadio.com.
All right, I need to get back to a happy place, so let's talk about Tomcat. Yes, Obamacare was upheld. Attorney General was held in contempt. But the event that held us all in its loving embrace this past week and a half or so was the split of Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. Now, once again, full disclosure, I come to my political philosophical views from the Christian right. And although I have made many modifications to that philosophy, after all, a man that masturbates as much as I do needs some mental gymnastics to sleep at night, I have abandoned neither my conservatism nor my Christianity. I say this only because I love Scientology. And why do I love Scientology? Because it's the only religion that is considered crazier than Christianity by the mainstream. You think I'm crazy because I believe a virgin gave birth and a man rose from the dead after 3 days in the ground? Well, at least I don't believe in engrams, thetans, and some alien overlord named Xenu. And what the fuck is a thetan anyway? You don't get to just make words up. I make up words too when I'm playing video games. Let's see. What elf wizard? I'll call him thetan. You know, Scientology was conceived by a college dropout science fiction writer who basically failed at mainstream life. So he started a cult. I don't know why some cults just attract a dozen and some attract millions, but his took off, so good for him. Read L. Ron Hubbard's Wikipedia page. It's like the script to an episode of Dateline. And before you get on me about the reliability of the internet, there are studies that show Wikipedia is generally as reliable as a regular encyclopedia. So there. Anyway, got this press release from Katie Holmes, where it says, I've decided to leave Tom Cruise and take up banging purveyor of MinorLeagueRadio.com, Jim Gardner. What? You don't believe me? It's right here, man. So yeah, that's the real reason. She wants to take the fast train to Jimmy Land. Yeah, we all know that's not true. All right, I think we will leave it there for another edition of the Minor League Radio Podcast. Good to be back on, and look forward to many, many more. Thanks for listening. As always, you can look us up on the web. Website's www.minorleagueradio.com. Email me, jim@minorleagueradio.com. Look for us on iTunes. We're there. You can download the podcast. You can subscribe and get my words of wisdom on a weekly basis. So, until next time, have a good one. Ciao, baby.